Morning. Today's daf in Sanhedrin, daf Gimel. Second day of the Masechta. We are on Beis Amud Beis. We're a little bit more than halfway down in the Amud. And the Gemara is now in the middle of the following discussion. We know that when putting together a Beis Din for cases, so there is a requirement, a mitzvah in the Torah, to make a composite of a court. And depending on the nature of the case, so that's going to determine how many judges we need. The first Mishnah, which we did yesterday, a very lengthy Mishnah, all the Mishnahs of the first parak are front-loaded onto the beginning of the onto the first daf. So we discussed yesterday what kind of cases require how many judges. To put it simply, if it's a monetary case, it requires 3 judges. If it's a capital case, it requires 23 judges. And there are going to be occasions where you're going to need the Sanhedrin, the court of 71, or maybe it's 70, which is a discussion coming up later in the Gemara. But anyway, in any event, that's the simplest way to say it. The Mishnah, however, when putting together these basic halachas, so the Mishnah presents itself as somewhat of a redundancy. If you look back at the Mishnah and you go over the first couple lines of the Mishnah, so I'm just going to reread very quickly. The Mishnah starts off, Dine Mamanos B'Shosha, and then when it comes to monetary law, so you need a panel of 3. You need a court of 3 judges. And then Gzeilos V'Chavos, and then when it comes to theft and it comes to damages, bodily damages, B'Shlosha, so then you need a court of 3. And the Gemara's question yesterday, after going through then all the other cases in the Mishnah, is just focusing on these 2 lines of the Mishnah. So the Gemara's bothered by a very simple question, which is, Gzeilos Chavala, when it comes to theft, when it comes to damages, so that's also monetary law. And so that also should have a requirement of 3, and we already knew that from the first clause of the Mishnah. When the Mishnah opens up with the words Dine Mamanos B'Shosha, so then the next words of the Mishnah is Gzeilos V'Chavalos. It's a redundancy. We already know that. That's monetary law. So that was a question the Gemara posed yesterday, and we are right now in the middle of the first approach of the Gemara. The first approach of the Gemara is that of Rabbi Abahu. And Rabbi Abahu says that when the Mishnah says Dine Mamanos B'Shosha, that then needs definition. The definition of that is Gzeilos V'Chavalos, meaning monetary law in the Mishnah, when recorded with the first case of the Mishnah, is not the general expansive term that describes all of monetary law, but rather it's referring specifically to Gzeilos V'Chavalos. And therefore, according to Rabbi Abahu, these 2 first cases of the Mishnah are not 2 cases, but rather Perusha Kamefarish. It's basically B is there to define A. That when it comes to monetary cases, what is monetary cases? It's Gzeilos V'Chavalos. So under those circumstances, you need a court of 3. Now you need a court of 3. So what then is the Mishnah coming to do? What the Mishnah is coming to do is tell us that when it comes to standard monetary cases, by standard I mean lending, admissions, hodos, v'avos, so there, so under those circumstances, there's going to be a relaxation of the rules. Why would there be a relaxation of the rules? Why, as I mentioned yesterday, why is there going to be deregulation, so to say? So the reason why is because, as we mentioned very briefly yesterday, we're going to be spending more time on this today. The idea is that the Chachamim wanted to promote lending. So Chachamim wanted to promote lending. They wanted lenders to lend. So if I'm a lender and I know that in order to get my money back, I have to go through a court system, meaning if my borrower is being a little bit difficult in paying me back. So I'm going to have to go through a court system. A court system that requires all the rules and all the regulations and all the standards of a regular court. So I don't want all the paperwork. I don't want all the procedure. You know what? Next time I'm just simply not going to lend again. Okay, so that we're going to basically promote, incentivize lenders to lend. So basically, there's going to be a relaxation of the rules regarding what is the composite nature of a court, and so that's why when it comes to lending, and when it comes to lending, so therefore the rules are relaxed, and that's why when the Mishnah is talking about Dinei Mamonos, the Mishnah is not talking about lending, and that's according to Rabbi Abahu, that's what the Mishnah is coming to teach us, Dinei Mamonos, and specifically what do we mean when we say Dinei Mamonos? Gzeilos V'Chavalos. Okay, that's the first shot. That's what we saw yesterday. Now what we saw yesterday also is, or I should say better, what we didn't see, however, yesterday was what exactly, which rules get relaxed when it comes to lending. So that we did not see yesterday. In fact, that's where we left off yesterday. That's where we're going to pick up today. So we are in Beis Amud Beis in Sanhedrin. The first word in the line is Ulamai. It's a little bit more than halfway down in the Amud, and the Gemara continues its discussion. Ulamai. So, now we know that when it comes to lending, so there's going to be relaxation of the rules. Which rules are getting relaxed? Elam Adilabin and Shlosha. So the Gemara says, so maybe you want to tell me that. Maybe you don't need to pay on all three. Meaning, if I'm a lender and I'm taking my borrower to court, the court doesn't have to be made up of three. The Gemara says, but we know that's simply not true. It's patently not true. According to Rabbi Abba, if I go to a court of two, meaning anything less than three, so the judgment's not going to be a good judgment. It's not a valid judgment. The valid judgment is only going to be when I went to a court made up of three judges. So the number itself, are we going to relax in terms of the numbers? We know no, it's not true. And we know that Rabbi Abba is of the opinion it's not true. Now, happens to be later this morning, we're going to see there are opinions, there are Amoraim who do allow for a court made up of less than three. But again, we are now within the opinion of Rabbi Abba, and we're asking now within Rabbi Abba where are the rules relaxed, and we know it's not with the number. So the Gemara says, Ela delo be'ina mumchem. So the Gemara says, so I'll tell you where the rules get relaxed. The rules get relaxed in terms of the quality of the judge. Generally speaking, when we talk about a judge, we're talking about a mumchem, we're talking about an expert. When we say an expert, what do we mean by expert? So Rashi over here writes, I'm reading the Rashi inside, Mumchin, Smuchin. So they are musmachim and they are authorized, which, by the way, may be redundancy. It may be one in the same point, that they're musmachim and they're authorized. So just a word about smicha. Okay, when we say smicha, what do we mean? So nowadays, your rabbis of your community, the rabbis who are your educators, so they receive smicha. Now, when they receive smicha, so it's not what we are describing right now as a formal smicha. So they went to whatever institution they went to, whatever yeshiva they went to, and they learned a certain amount, and they have a diploma, basically a smicha, saying that they mastered a certain amount. Okay, that's what happens nowadays, and it's been happening for the last hundreds and thousands of years. However, smicha, as the Gemara here is describing, is where you have been given smicha, a more formal smicha, where the person is giving you smicha, has himself been received smicha, and that transmission, that mesorah, goes all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. And this is a more formal version of smicha. When you are a musmach, when you are conferred smicha, back in the good old days, it means that you have an unbroken chain going back to Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, it goes without saying that chain was broken. Meaning, to tell you exactly when it was broken, I don't know. I don't know when it's broken, but just as an excellent historical footnote, it's well known that Rav Yosef Kaira, when living in Eretz Yisrael in the 16th century, so he wanted to bring back smicha. Now, how can you do that? How can you bring back smicha if the chain was broken? So there's an opinion of the Rambam. Forgive me right now, I'm not quoting the Rambam inside, but there's an opinion of the Rambam that says that as long as the majority of the Jewish people living in Eretz Yisrael are all in agreement, so smicha can be jump-started. So even though, quote-unquote, the battery's dead, but you can jump-start smicha. That's the Rambam's opinion. So based on that opinion of the Rambam, so Rav Yosef Kaira in the 16th century, together with his colleagues up in Sfas, so they wanted to jump-start smicha. He wanted to jump-start smicha. And I'm sure you would have guessed, but he was unsuccessful. He could not get agreement of all the rabbis in Eretz Yisrael in order to get smicha. Him and his group in Tzfas were totally on board. The rabbinate living in Jerusalem at the time, it's one person in particular, but I forgot the name. But they didn't. They weren't on board. Anyway, the Gemara says, so here's back to our Gemara. So here's where the rules are going to get relaxed according to Rabbi Abba. Normally, when you go to a basin, so the basin has to be made up of musmachim. However, says Rabbi Abba, this is now going to be where, if you're a lender and you're going to court, doesn't have to be musmachim. You don't have to go around finding three musmachim. You can go to people who are not received smicha, and as we're going to be discussing a little bit later also, not even super knowledgeable on the court system and on the laws of court, on the rule of law, so they're the ones who can preside over the case. So the Gemara says, Micah suffers. So the Gemara says, wait one second. Let me see if I can understand this. So the Gemara says, so I don't understand. Rabbi Abba is taking a position which is nowhere, meaning it's neither here nor there. Now, where's here and where's there? So the Gemara over here talks about Erev Parshios. Erev Parshios, we've discussed now some time ago, and it was at the end of Baba Kama. What is this idea of Erev Parshios? So the idea of Erev Parshios goes like this. We know, if you open up to Parshas Mishpatim, so you know that a lot of monetary law is discussed in Parshas Mishpatim. The laws of Nezek, the laws of being a Shomer, the laws of lending money, and many other monetary laws are contained within Parshas Mishpatim. Now, Parshas Mishpatim is just basically one Parsha, another Parsha, another Parsha, each one successively talking about various monetary law. And within the Parsha, so for example, we know that there is a Parsha regarding Shomrim, regarding being a custodian. So in Perichav Beis, Ki Yiten Ish Al Re'eu Ketzef Hakel Lashmor, V'gunam Mibeis HaYishim Yimatzei Ganav. So Yishalim Shnayim. So if you are leaving something as a deposit by your friend, and it's stolen, and you find the thief, so you have to pay two times. Im Lo Yimatzei Ganav. So now, but what if you don't find the Ganav? And now you're turning to the Shomer, and you're saying to the Shomer, where's my item? And he says, look, I'm really sorry it's stolen. So now what do you do? You take him to court, and you make a Shvua. V'nikra Balabais El Ha Elohim. And so you take the owner to Elohim. Now here it's chol, it's not kodesh. It's referring to the judge. You take him to the judge. Im lo shalach yadam b'mlechas reyu, to make sure that he didn't misappropriate. Al kol av pesh al shor hamor al salma. Al kol aveda asher yomar ki uzeh ad Elohim yavod dvar shneim asher yashin Elohim yishalim shneim l'reyu. And you go to the judge, and you go to the judge. Okay. And if you'll note, as I read the pasuk, so how many times does it say the word Elohim? It says three times. Okay. And so from here we know that the makeup of a court is going to be three. You need three for a court by virtue of the fact that it says the word Elohim three times. Now, this is in regards to what kind of monetary law? Shomrim. This is in regard to being a custodian. Where is the parsha of lending money? One page later in Chumash. So the im kesef talve esami esani imach lo siyelo kenoshev lo si simon alav neshach. So moving ahead now to pasuk chav dalim. So it's a parsha later, a couple parshas later. So I don't mean parsha meaning Shabbos parsha. I mean like, you know, just sections. So just a couple sections later. So the Torah describes the lending. So the requirement of three judges is back in Shomer. The mitzvah of lending is a parsha later. So even though the requirement of three judges is mentioned in the parsha regarding Shomrim, does that translate, is that requirement now going to move forward to the parsha of lending? And this is going to be contingent on whether or not you subscribe to the idea of Erev Parshios or whether you do not subscribe to the idea of Erev Parshios. What is the idea of Erev Parshios? It means, Erev means Tarovis, mixture, meaning, do we say,
huh? What was last word you said?
Erev Parshios, Tarovis. Tyrovitz, it's the same word, just, you know, described a little bit differently. It means basically a mixture, so a blending, if you will. So, if you subscribe to the idea of Erev Parshios, that means that basically you understand that even though there is the requirement of three judges mentioned over here, but nevertheless, it's mu'urav. The whole parsha is mixed together, and therefore there's going to also be a requirement of three judges in other sections of monetary law as well. If you take a look at the Rashi over here, the long Rashi towards the bottom, Rashi takes us back to the Gemara Baba Kama. So there's an opinion that says that these parshios are all mixed up, or mixed together. That even though there's a section mentioning a halacha in this parsha, it doesn't belong in this parsha, but actually belongs in another parsha as well. Kigon. So Rashi gives us the classic example of where you see Erev Parshios at its best. Asher yomar ki huzeh d'yafim minei mod b'mikzeh satani shava. So for example, we have the pasuk of ki huzeh. That pasuk is in Shomrim. It's in Parsha Shomrim. And that teaches us the halacha moda b'miksas. That when I make a partial admission, so I need to make a shvua. Now, shekazeh b'shomer chinam. Now, it's written in the Parsha of Shomer chinam, when a non-paid custodian. Lava shomer chinam kai, d'shomrim afa pish lohoda b'miksas chayav l'shava da'oda b'miksas hatana ha-parsha zim keser tavikai. Now, A partial admission is not relevant to a shomer. How do I know that? Because when you're a shomer and you're making a denial, and it's a full denial, you have to make a shvua. So when is there a requirement to make a partial? I'm sorry, to make a shvua on a partial admission. So that's by money. That's by lending. And Rashi points out, as we learn back in the Gemaras, you see, if I'm borrowing money from somebody, so he did me a service, he did me a favor, there's no way I'm going to be brazen enough, I will not have the chutzpah to look him right in the eye and say, I don't know what you're talking about. You didn't lend me any money. Like, what's going on over here? You won't do that. So if you make a full denial, so the assumption is that you're telling the truth. So where is there a requirement to make a shvua? Not if you make a full denial, but rather you made a partial denial. And if you remember the Gemara's back then, why are you making a partial denial? Because really what you're trying to do is you're trying to push them off. Meaning, yes, I owe you some of the money, but not all of the money. Here's some of the money now. Although, quite frankly, what I just described is halach. Anyway. So the parsha of the, I should say better, the pasuk of Kiyuzeh, although placed in parsha Shomrim, really belongs in the parsha of lending. So, and such a maneuver of taking a pasuk here and moving it to another pasuk over there assumes this idea of Erev Parshios. That really, they're all mixed together. When it comes to a custodian, so look, he didn't do me any favors. In fact, just the opposite. I did him a favor. He asked me to wash something. He says he's not even going to pay me. Okay, fine. And then later on, I lost it or it was stolen, and now he comes in. He's coming to get it. So am I going to be chutzpah dick to say, I don't know what you're talking about? Yeah, it's better not to, obviously, right? I'm going to promote telling the truth, but at least there you can understand the psychology of, look, he didn't do me a favor, I'm doing him a favor, and now the item is lost, you know what? I'll just deny it. And so therefore the Torah there requires the person to make a shvua. Now, all that stated, in other words, that's a crash course in Erev Parshios. With all that stated, so now let's translate to our discussion over here. I should say better Elohim b'hai kram. Demashma mumchin lashon srara v'rabanus kedemar targaminon reinasati Elohim lafaro lashon rabanus v'libay mumchin. So now, where is the Torah mentioned the requirement of three judges? That's in Shomrim. If you subscribe to Erev Parshios, so then what you're going to do is you're going to take that requirement and move it to Im Kesef Talva. You're going to move it to the Parsha of Lending. With all that stated, so now, where do we stand right now? Where we stand right now is if you are subscribed to Erev Parshios, so that means that the requirement of having three judges and three expert judges is going to be required by Lending. And so now the Gemara is turning its attention to Rabbi Abba and saying, Rabbi Abba, where are you? Apparently, neither here nor there. Meaning, if you subscribe to Erev Parshios, so then, how many judges do you need? Three. Do they need to be mumchin? Yes. And if you don't subscribe to Erev Parshios, and there is an opinion that doesn't subscribe to it, and if you don't subscribe to Erev Parshios, so then by lending, is there a requirement of three? No, it's not mentioned there. Is there a requirement of mumchin? Again, no, it's not mentioned there. So how can you, Rabbi Abahu, take that middle position, which is not a fundamental position? Either you do or you don't subscribe to Erev Parshios. But the idea that you require three, but they don't have to be mumchim, it's neither here nor there.
Rabbi,
yes?
Can't you say that borrowing money is similar to being a shomer? You're borrowing also, so why can't the laws be similar because of that?
Right. But first of all, in the Torah, there are two separate Parshios. And that's one. And two, in terms of who's doing whom a favor, it's just the opposite. In the case of lending, the lender is doing the borrower a favor. In the case of shmirah, the shomer is doing the owner a favor. So it's two different parshios, and just psychologically, it's going in two totally different directions of who's servicing whom. So the Gemara says,
if you don't say Erev Parshios, if you don't say
right,
at least one dayan should have.
Exactly, and that's what bothers the Gemara. And so the Gemara says, so where's Rabbi Abba stand? So, La'olam, the Gemara says, Kasav Erev Parshios, Kasav Khan, really, he does subscribe to Erev Parshios. Uvedinu Dilibai Nami Mumchen. And so therefore, once you subscribe to Erev Parshios, that means that you need three and they need to be expert judges. All true. So, Vahai Dilabi Nimumchen. And so now, Rabbi Abba was saying, Min HaTorah, there is a requirement of three, there is a requirement of Mumchen. And what I'm now saying is, That's where the deregulation exists. Where what the Chachamim did is that they relaxed the rules of Mumchen. Mishum de Rabbi Chanina, Dama Rabbi Chanina, Dvar Torah Echadina Mamnos, Echadina Fashas, Bejusha Vachakira. And the Gemara says, and I'll give you another example where rules got relaxed. Really, when it comes to monetary law, you have to go through standard procedure. What is standard procedure? Drisha v'chakira. What's the idea behind drisha v'chakira? The idea is that when you have a witness coming in, so you start with basic questions: when did it happen? Where did it happen? Then you continue asking more questions, detailing exactly the account. And the idea behind Drisha V'Chakira, we're going to be discussing it later in the Masechta, fifth parak of Sanhedrin. The idea behind it is that, you, first of all, we need to know where and when it happened. But on top of that, also when the witnesses are presenting themselves, they have to become susceptible to the idea of Edim Zomimim. Meaning, we don't want them to be Edim Zomimim, but they at least have to set themselves up to become Edim Zomimim. Which means that if two other witnesses come and say, how could you testify about that case? You were not there at the time that you said you were. Meaning your when and your where are not true. How do we know that's not true? Imanu ha'isim ha'makamponi. Because at the time you said you were there, you were with us at the time. And there's a Chiddush HaTorah that we believe the Edim HaMazimim over the Edim Zomimim. We are going to spend an entire Masechta to that topic. Well, not really an entire Masechta. The first parak of Makos is dedicated to that topic. So stay tuned. But anyway, there's this requirement of Drisha V'Chakira. So when the witnesses come in, we got to grill them. And now, we have to grill them in what kind of cases? The answer is, all cases. There is a requirement of Drisha V'Chakira. And how do I know that? So the Gemara goes on to say, we're now turning to the top of Gimel Manav. Shenema, the Pasuk says, Mishpat Echad Yelachem. Because the Torah says that when it comes to the judicial process, there has to be a uniformity within the judicial process. And so that means that all kinds of cases, both civil and capital cases, have to be tried in the same judicial process. Which means that every witness has to go through Drisha V'Chakira. And meanwhile, when it comes to monetary law, specifically lending, so there was a relaxation of the rule, meaning that when the witnesses come in, so they are not grilled to that extent. Why? Why not? Meaning if the Torah requires Drisha V'Chakira, so why is there going to be a relaxation of the rule? Gemara says it here straightforward, because what you're going to do is, again, if we're going to go through all regulation of what is standard procedure of a court, and we're going to require Drisha V'Chakira, so the witnesses are going to get grilled, and now the lender may lose the case based on a technicality because of all the details of how all this works. And now the lender obviously is going to lose the case on a technicality, so now next time he's asked to lend, he's going to be like, no thank you. And the lender will tell his friends, do me a favor, here's what happened to me. Let me give you some sound advice. Don't go to court. Don't lend money. Don't go to court. And basically now what's going to do is that the whole lending business, it's not a business by the way, because you're not making money because you're not charging with interest. But the whole institution of lending now is going to be significantly compromised. And like we keep saying again and again, it's one of the biggest themes that are coming out of these first couple dapim of the Masechta, the Chachamim wanted to stimulate lending. And therefore they relaxed the rules. So we see over here by Drisha V'Chakira, basically what the Chachamim did is they waived it. They said, no, you don't need to do Drisha V'Chakira when it comes to monetary law. Now the Gemara says that regarding Drisha V'Chakira, so the Gemara says the same thing now is going to be true regarding the quality of the judge. The judge does not need to be a mumcha. He does not need to be a proficient musmach. He can be somebody who is just basically knowledgeable, doesn't have smicha, and that would be okay. And with that, the lender can go get his money. Elamiata, we're continuing in the Gemara now. So, we have learned, according to Rabbi Abbahu, two areas in which the rules get relaxed when it comes to lending. One is the waiving of Drisha V'Chakira, and two is the quality of the judge. He doesn't have to be a mumcha. Elamiata, the Gemara says, well, if all this is true, so tolo yishamu. So the Gemara says, what about immunity? We will be learning later in the Masechta that if you are a musmach and you're adjudicating, so you're given a certain amount of immunity in the case where you make a mistake. Now, we're going to be discussing this in more detail later on. If it is a gross error of judgment amongst the judges, so under those circumstances, they are going to have to pay. However, if it's a not gross error, but just it's an error in a detail, it's a fine point that they missed, so they can adjudicate with a certain amount of protection and immunity. So the Gemara says, so over here, if I'm having these judges who are not musmachim, but we're waiving the rule of musmachim, so why don't we provide them the immunity which a musmach enjoys? So the Gemara says, so the Gemara says, I'll tell you why we can't do that. We can't do that because, again, what's motivating us is that we want to stimulate lending. We want to make it easier for the lender. So the Gemara says, so now let's consider. We're having a judge presiding over the case, or three judges, I should say better. And those three judges presiding over the case are not mumchen, they're not experts. And we're going to give them immunity because, again, a musmach is afforded a certain amount of protection as a judge. So he does not have to pay for totally non-negligent errors. So the Gemara says, so let's consider now. So the lender now goes to court. The judge made a mistake. He's given immunity, and now the lender's going to walk away not having gotten paid, neither from the borrower, and the judges themselves are now going to be working under this protection, under this immunity. So now the lender, once again, is going to go home and tell his wife and tell his colleagues, here's what happened in court today, you're not going to believe it, I don't recommend you lend. So again, if the whole motivation over here is that we want lenders to lend, so therefore the judges who are non-mumchen, who are presiding over the case, are not going to be afforded this immunity. So the Gemara says, Ihachi, okay, so where do we stand right now? So now we have a pshat in our Mishnah, according to Rabbi Abba. Okay. And the pshat is that when the Mishnah says dina mamnos b'shlosha, so the Mishnah is not talking about the general category of monetary cases and lending, but the next line of the Mishnah is an explanation. What case are we talking about specifically? Gzeilos v'chavalos. We're talking about theft, we're talking about damages. But when it comes to lending, the requirements are not as intense. We don't follow the standard procedure. And now, as the Gemara has just fleshed it out, what's being waived? So the number's not being waived according to Rabbi Abba. There's still a requirement of three. But what's being waived is a couple of things. Number one, Jewish of Hakira. The judge, the witnesses themselves don't need to be grilled. And two, the quality of judge. You don't have to go around finding musmachim. You can even find non-musmachim to preside over the case, and that's going to be fine. That'll be acceptable. And as far as once they're non-musmachim, are they going to be able to adjudicate under immunity? And the answer to that is no. But again, we just explained that that's there to protect the lender. Okay. All this is well and good. And now the Gemara goes back and the Gemara says, it's all well and good. We understand the basis of Rabbi Abba's position, but quite frankly, says the Gemara, it doesn't fit into the language of the Mishnah. And now what the Gemara is going to do is basically going to re-examine Rabbi Abba's pshat in the Mishnah, and just textually speaking, is the Mishnah really saying all this? E hachi tarti katani. So the Gemara says, well, if Rabbi Abba was right, so then we can go back to the Mishnah, and we don't have to say the pshat that Rabbi Abba said in the Mishnah. He said that when the Mishnah says, Dina Mamanus Beshlosha, then you have to read the next line as a perish of that first line of the Mishnah. Now it's not true. What we could simply say, says the Gemara, is that Dina Mamanus Beshlosha, that's talking about lending, and then Gzeilos V'Chavos Beshlosha, and then theft and bodily damage is also with three. And you could leave the Mishnah like that alone. And they are two independent clauses of the Mishnah. And why does the Mishnah have to make them independent? If you're Rabbi Abba, the answer is very simple. Because Dina Mamanus Beshlosha, that when it's lending, it's done in front of three, and you don't need Mumchem. Dina Chavos, Gzeilos V'Chavos Beshlosha, or I added a word, but same point. Gzeilos V'Chavos Beshlosha, so that you need three, but you need a different type of three. Qualitatively you need Mumchem. So the Gemara says, so Rabbi Abba, now that we're here, so your pshat in the Mishnah is an unnecessary pshat. And furthermore, says the Gemara, Va'od, Shlosha Shlosha Lamali. And Rabbi Abba, if you're right, that the Mishnah is Perusha Kamefarish, that the second line of the Mishnah is an explanation of the first line of the Mishnah, why would the Mishnah need to repeat the word Bishlosha? Meaning, how should the Mishnah read? Dine Mamanos Gzeilus vechavalus b'shlosha. In other words, the fact that the Mishnah says dinam amaros b'shlosha, gzeilus vechavalus b'shlosha, is really screaming at us that the Mishnah is really talking about two clauses, not a singular clause. That's true. It's certainly true. Meaning, again, the Gemara is asking questions. They're not. In other words, we could still defend Rabbi Abahu, but it's difficult. It is difficult to read all that in the Mishnah. Elama Rava, Tarti Katani. So Rava says, so really, my opinion, not like Rabbi Abahu, is that when the Mishnah is providing us these two different clauses, they are two independent clauses. And Mishum de Rabbi Chanina. And the Gemara says, as far as how to understand these two independent clauses, so he's going to side with Rabbi Chanina. meaning, as Rashi points out over here, meaning that Rabba is of the opinion that he subscribes to Erev Parshios. He subscribes to the idea of Erev Parshios, that really fundamentally, I need three, even though, again, the requirement of three is mentioned in Shomrim, but if you subscribe to Erev Parshios, we'll move that over to lending as well. And really, I need Mumchim. And what Rava, however, holds is that still there's going to be a relaxation of the rule, and that I don't need Mumchim. And why don't I need Mumchim? Again, the rules are going to get relaxed because of what we learned with Rabbi Chanina. What did we learn with Rabbi Chanina? That we relax the rules regarding Jushuf and Chakira. We're also going to relax the rules regarding the fact that I need to get Mumchim. I don't need to get Mumchim. Okay, I'll just make a point which is both obvious and salient in terms of Rav's position and Rabbi Abahu. Meaning, really what comes down now is that Rav and Rabbi Abahu are at the same conclusion. It's just a question of now how to read the Mishnah, how the Mishnah flows. But just to make an obvious point. So where do we stand right now? And the way I presented the Gemara is the way Rashi presented the Gemara is that there the Torah requirement when it comes to lending is that if we need to go to court, I need to, min haTorah, go to a court made up of three, and they need to be made up of three mumchim. That's where we stand right now. At least that is the way Rashi understands Rava. Okay. And the Chachamim relax the rules. Question. By what right does the Chachamim have to relax the rules? Meaning we know what motivated them. What motivated them was to promote lending and to incentivize lending. And so therefore they deregulated in order so that the lenders have an easier time getting their money back. Okay, you already know the answer. So, but in other words, but structurally, mechanically, by what right can they do that? If the Torah imposes a certain standard in terms of how the court is going to proceed, so then how can they just simply say, we're going to waive this, we're going to waive that? By what right can they do that? And the answer has to be, and the Ron says this, the Rashi and Tosfos don't address this question, but you have to say this, it's based on the principle of Hefker based in Hefker. Hefker based in Hefker means that the Chachamim have the right to disavow a person of his money. I learned it from the Pesukim in Ezra Nehemiah, the Gemara in Gittin discussed it on Daf Lamed Vav, meaning we know this principle of Hefker based in Hefker. So once we have this principle of Hefker based in Hefker, that the Chachamim have this kind of executive power, where if they feel there's a need, they can take money away from somebody and go a step further, and not only take money away from somebody, but also transfer it over to somebody else. So over here, when it comes to monetary law, since they anyway have that kind of executive privilege and power to take money away from somebody and give it to another, this is the principle of Hefker based in Hefker. It's the basis for which the Chachamim put together the principle. So therefore, over here, they could take the court regulation and waive some of those regulations based on the principle of Hefker based in Hefker. Okay, yeah, you have to say that. Continuing now in the Gemara, Rav Achabre de Ravika. We are in Gimel Amud Aleph, and the Gemara now is going to give us another opinion in terms of what is absolutely required when it comes to a monetary case. Rav Achabre de Ravika Amar Midoraisa Chanami Kasha. So he says that when it comes to monetary law, may Iker Adin according to the strict letter of the law, you need only one judge. You don't need three judges. Now, this goes against what we've been saying up until now. Up until now, we've been saying that by lending, you need three judges. If you subscribe to the idea of Erev Parshios, which Rava does, according to Rashi, and seemingly Not seemingly. Rabbi Abahu does as well, which the Gemara said on the previous Amud. But on this, Rav Acha Breda Rav Ika fundamentally disagrees, and he says that no, min haTorah you only need one judge. And how do I know that? Shenemar b'tzedek tishpot amitecha, because the Torah says that you're going to judge your colleague. Tishpot is lashon yachid, meaning you in the singular are going to judge. Although you could argue the point, you could say that tishpot is going on the on the Beis Din, not on the individual. But he understands that it's going on the individual. And Rashi says, again, not everyone agrees with Rashi, but I'm going to present the Gemara like Rashi. And Rashi says he is not a subscriber to Erev Parshios. So that means that going back to Parshios Mishpatim, the fact that the Torah does require a court of three that's limited to Shomrim, that doesn't move over, doesn't translate over to lending, to Im Kesef Talves Ami. So he doesn't subscribe to Erev Parshios. And so therefore, he's of the opinion that when it comes to monetary cases, monetary, you require one. Now, if there's a requirement of monetary cases, minatory, that you only need a court of a panel of one, so he doesn't disagree with our Mishnah, right? Meaning we're going to assume that he agrees with our Mishnah, that dinim amrus b'shlosha. So how do you move from one to three? So elamishum yoshei kronos. So the Gemara says, but here's the concern. The concern is that if all I need is a court of one, so then, again, he doesn't subscribe to Erev Parshios, so he doesn't need that one person to be a mumcha. So who can preside over the case? The Gemara describes this individual as Yoshev Kronos. He sits in the corner, right? He loiters. He really is not knowledgeable in the laws of dinim, in monetary law. Does he know nothing? From Rashi, I don't get that impression. Rashi writes, Yoshev Kronos, Tagrin she'en b'kiyim b'tiv dinim v'yitzke ezechai v'yechai v'sazakai. So Rashi describes him as a merchant that is not proficient in the minutia of monetary law. I get the impression from Rashi that he has some base knowledge of how to adjudicate. He himself is a merchant. He understands the basic nature of business, but he doesn't have proficiency in law. He doesn't know the halachos. So the Gemara says, so I'm worried, says Rav Acha, that if we allow the Torah law, which is a single judge, and he doesn't have to be a mumcha, so he'll be somebody who is Yoshev Kronos. He's not knowledgeable. So the Gemara says, and what's going to end up happening, as I just read in Rashi, is that he's going to, he's not going to judge the case correctly. The lender's not going to get his money because of this one single judge who didn't judge correctly. So the Gemara says, "Atu betalatzim ilo havi yoshev kronos." So the Gemara says, okay. So for that reason, we're going to take the court from one and move it up to three. So the Gemara says, how does that help us? Meaning if you have one yoshev kronos, so you can have three yoshev kronos. So the Gemara says, "E efshar deleitz behu cha de gamer." So the Gemara says, interestingly, well, if you get three, it will be impossible. Now, of course, that's not absolutely true, but I'll say it like this. It will be very difficult that once you get a panel of three, that one of them is not going to be knowledgeable, meaning one of them will be knowledgeable of the three. Yeah. Now, it then engenders the following discussion. Well, if that's true, so then I have a court made up of, it's a funny court, one judge who's proficient, two judges who are not that knowledgeable, and then what? And then we're going to follow the majority? I understand it's right. Or maybe right. That's right. That's a good observation. Meaning maybe that one will then influence the others in terms of judging properly. Right. Okay. I know. In other words, it does engender a very odd discussion. But the Gemara says so. But that's the way it works according to Rav Acha. The Torah only requires one judge. The Chachamim bumped it up to three so that, statistically speaking, we'll get somebody there who knows what he's talking about. So the Gemara says, "Elam yata tal lo yishamu." So the Gemara says, "Now let them operate with immunity." The Gemara says, "Kol shekein nefisha yoshei kronos." So the Gemara says, "If you let them judge with immunity, so basically everyone's going to want to be a judge. Who doesn't want to be a judge? Who doesn't want to have the status of being a judge? And if I can judge with immunity, oh for sure, it's going to basically get everybody. It's going to get everybody and anybody on the bench." So the Gemara says, "So we don't want that." Third parak, we're going to be discussing much more of that, of your question. That's going to be a big discussion in the beginning of the third parak. Okay, coming up shortly. Three short weeks. So the Gemara says, in Efishi Yosha Kronos. So my Ika Bein Rava L'Rav Achabre D'Ravika. So the Gemara says, okay, so where do we stand right now? So there is a debate in terms of how to read the Mishnah. And there is a fundamental debate in terms of what the Torah requires. Does the Torah require three judges on monetary cases or one judge? Gemara says, all this is true, but when the day's over, and when you've learned the entire daf, and when you've concluded, we're all in agreement, meaning that everybody finally comes to the same point, which is, if you want to judge a monetary case, and specifically by lending, so you're going to need a court of three, they don't have to be mumchim, they don't have to be smuchim, they're not going to judge with immunity, the witnesses don't need drisha v'chakira, meaning we're all at the same place. How we got here, everyone took a different path to how we got here, but we're all now at the same place. So if we're all at the same place, so really, the abstract discussion that we had is good, the principles are nice, but the reality is that we're all in the same place. So the Gemara says, is there going to be a practical difference between the way Rava understands it, that principally we need three, versus the way Rav Ach understands it, which is that principally we only need one, when ultimately they're all in agreement that you need a court of three. So the Gemara says, there is going to be a practical difference, and that is Damar Shmuel. A statement made by Shmuel. What is a statement made by Shmuel? Shnaim Shadanu Dinaim Din, El Shanikru Beisin Chatzof. So Shmuel's of the opinion that if I go in front of a court of two, I shouldn't. Let's start there. I shouldn't. But if I go in front of a court of two and they judge the case, is their judgment valid? Shmuel says yes. Now we can label them a Beis Din Chatzuf. They have chutzpah. They're arrogant. And the reason why they're arrogant and the reason why it's called the chutzpah de court is because the rabbis didn't want them. The Chachamim wanted three. And they're adjudicating with two. And we could also add a whole bunch of potential pitfalls when going to a court of two, meaning it can end in a stalemate. Meaning if I go to a court of three, I know there's going to be a judgment. Either they're going to have a unanimous decision or two of them are going to side one way. Those are your only two possibilities. When I go to a court of two, either there's going to be a unanimous decision or the two of them are going to disagree, which under those circumstances, stalemate. And we're going to have to do this again. So it's certainly not prudent to go to a court of two. But we're not talking about prudency right now. We're talking about validity. Can I go to a court of two? So Shmuel says yes. So the Gemara says, now L'Rav Leisle D'Shmuel, L'Rav Achabrei D'Ravika, Isle D'Shmuel. Now that you know the fundamental positions, you'll know whether they agree with Shmuel or they don't. Rava cannot agree with Shmuel because Rava says, Minotaur, how many do you need? You need three, according to Rava. Why? Because he subscribes to Erev Parshios. So will he allow the validity of a court of two? Absolutely not. According to Rav Acha, would he allow the validity of the court of two? Sure. Because he says fundamentally, one is okay. The Chachamim upped the number to three. But would he be okay with two? Meaning, he doesn't recommend it. He thinks the court is arrogant for presiding with two. But validity-wise, is it going to work? Yes, it's going to work.
But what about the idea that it could be dead like a
Right. Agreed. And so, I mentioned it, but you're right. The Gemara itself doesn't mention it. Okay, continuing now in the Gemara, we're on Gimel Amud Aleph. We are continuing now in just simply the reading of the Mishnah. The Mishnah then goes on to say that when it comes to Nezek v'chasi Nezek, you need a court of three. Nezek hainu chaval. So Gemara again is bothered by the redundancy of the Mishnah. We're talking about damages. Damages and chavala is the same. Chavala is bodily damage. When I bodily damage somebody else, so the first thing I have to pay is Nezek. I have to pay the damage that I caused. So I understand you can make a distinction between bodily damage and property damage, but when all said and done, it's damages. The Mishnah already told us that you go in front of a panel of three, in front of a court of three. So what's the Mishnah adding by saying Nezek and Chatzi Nezek? So the Gemara says, Mishum dekabai lemisli Chatzi Nezek. So Tanina mi Nezek shalem. So the Gemara says, well, the Mishnah wanted to address Chatzi Nezek. So the Gemara says, Chatzi Nezek nami. Hainu chaval. So again, the Gemara says, you didn't add anything to the discussion. What does Chatzi Nezek have damages? It's damages, meaning under certain circumstances, you only pay half damages. So the Gemara says, but again, it's redundant in the Mishnah. So Tana Mamona v'Katana Kedasa. So the Gemara says, well, half damages, according to one opinion, is not considered monetary law. It's considered punitive. And so therefore, the Mishnah wanted to tell us that when it comes to Kenas, I still go in front of a court of three. Hanich lamanda amar paganizka kanasa, lamanda amar paganizka mamona ma'ika lamemar. Gemara says, remember all the way back in Baba Kama, we discussed this early in Baba Kama. how do I view half damages? If my short time damages your shore, and the Torah says I only have to pay half damages, is the Torah basically imposing a fine on me, which means that really I don't have to pay anything? The fact that my animal gored your animal is so unusual, so strange, and yet the Torah has to demands that I pay half damages, is that a kenas? Or maybe no. Maybe I really should be paying full damages, and the Torah relaxed, and the Torah cut me a break, because this is the first time it happened, or the second time it happened, or the third time. But in other words, but it's really mamonos. You'll remember back in Baba Kama, the Gemara debated this very issue. If you subscribe to the idea that Chatzi Nezik is a Knas, so then I understand its introduction to our Mishnah because it's a novel point. But if Chatzi Nezik is Mammon, so we're back to square one. It's Mammon, and we already know that monetary cases is presided over a quarter three. So what is our Mishnah telling us that's new? Tzroros. Okay. Chatzi Nezik is learned through Pesukim. So the Gemara says, "My ikal meimer ela aydi the kabbai lemisli teshlam ekefet teshlam abra vechamisha the mamon sheena mishalim berosh who tananami chatzi nezik the mamon sheena mishalim berosh." So the Gemara says, because look at the next line of the Mishnah where the Mishnah talks about kefil, the double payment of the thief, and dal vehei, if the thief compounds his thievery with either selling or shechting the animal, so he has to pay four or five times the amount. That is mamon sheena mishalim berosh. I have to pay more than face value. So the Gemara says, so once I'm describing non-face value payments of kefal dal v'hei, so tananami chatzi nezik the mamon sheena mishalim berosho. So half damages, whether it's money or whether it's kenas, it's non-face value payment. In other words, it's an occasion where the Torah does not require me to pay the face value of the damage. That's why it made it into the Mishnah. And then, as long as the Mishnah said the words chatzi nezik, so the Mishnah also used the occasion to mention nezik as well. Okay, let's do a little bit more for this morning. Shlosha minalan. So the requirement that there has to be three judges, from where do I know that? Now, we already know most of the answer to this question because we already discussed in the beginning of this year today, the end of yesterday's year, but here the Gemara just addresses the question straight on. How do I know that that has to be done in front of a court of three? Shlosha minalan. The Tanur Rabban, the Gemara quotes the following braisa. V'nikra balabayis el ha'elohim. Hare kan echad adolim yavod varshtem, hare kan shlaim asher yashun alohim, hare kan shlosha, divrei Rav Yoshia. So the Gemara quotes the Braisa and the first opinion of the Braisa of Rabbi Yoshia, which is you look in the Parsha of Shomrim and you see how many times the word Elohim is mentioned over there, three, and that tells us that there are three judges. Rabbi Yonasan Amar Rishon Tchila Namar Ve'ein Dorshin Tchilos. So Rabbi Yonasan disagrees in the following. The first time the Pasuk says the word Elohim, you can't darshan it. Why can't you darshan it? Because it's there to tell us the basic halacha that we have to go to court. And we have to go to a court made up of judges. But I can't count that as my first judge because, first and foremost, we need to learn from the Torah the most basic information, which is I need to go to court. So that first usage of the word Elohim is not there to count as a judge. Ella. Ad Elohim yavod varshneim hare kan echan. Asher yashin Elohim hare kan shnayim. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yonasan, what are we going to do? We're going to count the second mention of Elohim. That now is open for drasha. We're going to mention that we're going to count the third time. So now two is one and three is two. Hopefully that made sense. Yeah, right? And now, how many judges do I need? I need two judges. However, ein bezin shakel, but having an even number for a bezin is untenable. So therefore, mostly if in lamod achat, so therefore we're going to add another judge to get us to the number three, harei kan shlosha. So the Gemara says, okay, so, machlokas tanaim, exactly how we get to the number three. Do I count the word Elohim three times, or I can't count the first time because that's telling us the basic halacha, therefore I only count two and three, which is one and two, and I know that an even number is untenable, which gets me to three. And again, we're basically at the same point that we were just a couple minutes earlier this morning. They agree. Just a question of how to get there, but they agree. Name of a Dorshin Tchilos, Kamifli, the Marsav a Dorshin Tchilos, the Marsav a Dorshin Tchilos. The Gemara proposes that maybe they're having a basic debate of the first time the Torah uses a term. Can I darshan that term or no? It has to first teach me the basic halacha, and then only after that can I darshan. The Gemara says, no. The Gemara says, no. They both agree that I'm not generally in a position to darshan the first time the Torah uses a term, even if it's a strange term. Amalecha Rav Yoshia, but Rav Yoshia says this is an exceptional case. Why? Because imke nemakra v'nikra balabais ala shofet, because the Torah, if the Torah just wanted to describe going to court, the Torah could use the word shofet. In fact, we know the mitzvah in the Torah of setting up a court system in Parsha Shoftim uses the word shofet. So, if the Torah wanted to just give us the basic halacha, the Torah would have used the word shofet. My Elha Elohim Shema Mina Leminyana. The fact that the Torah uses such an exceptional term over here means that this is an exceptional case, and I can darshan the first time the Torah uses the word. Rabbi Yonasan Lishandam Anaka Kedamin Shemandi Isle Dina Likrav Legabe Dayana. Rav Yonasan will say, no, the Torah uses such language, but it's not so unusual, and therefore I can't count that first usage. Rav Yoshia, Leisle Beisenote Vahatanya. So the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. According to Rav Yoshia, he would have been okay in theory with an even court. We know that's not true. Vahatanya, the Gemara quotes the following brisa. Rabbi Eliezer ben Asher, Rav Yoshia, Gluli Omer, Matam Alomer, Lintos Achari Ram, Lahatos HaTorah, Amra, Selecha Beisden, Note. The court has to be made up of an odd number. The court has to come to a conclusion. And even numbers we discussed earlier, the court may not necessarily come to a conclusion. Therefore, the court has to be odd numbered. So therefore, there has to either be unanimous decision or a majority decision.
It could
also be 3-3. So the Gemara says, Savala Karev Yehuda Damar Shivim. So the Gemara proposes over here such an interesting proposal, which is that maybe Rabbi Yoshia doesn't subscribe to the idea that the court has to be odd. In fact, we know in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda says that the Sanhedrin is made up of 70, and that's an even number. Did not Sanhedrin Gedola Haisa Shoshim Ve'echad. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shivim. And we know Rabbi Yehuda allows for a court to be made up of 70. Which means that he's okay with an even number. And now what the Gemara is doing is suggesting that Rabbi Yoshia, at least in theory, would have allowed a court made up of two, no different than Rabbi Yehuda requiring the Sanhedrin to be made up of 70. The Gemara says he got to slow down. Gemara says, yes, it's true that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Sanhedrin is made up of 70. The Torah uses the number 70. But that doesn't mean that in general he's okay with an even number. This is an exceptional case because the Torah says that for a Sanhedrin it's made up of 70. But I would argue that according to Rav Yehuda, any other time that we have a composite court, it's got to be made up of an odd number. And maybe you'll tell me, yeah, that's not true. Maybe he's okay with an even number. Gemara says, I know it's true that according to Rav Yehuda, in all other occasions, he demands an odd number. V'hatana, we go back to our Mishnah. Rav Yehuda Omer Bechamisha. So in terms of the Beis Din placing its hand on the head of the Parhelm Davishol Tzibor and Egla Rufa, debate between Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda, whether 3 and 5. V'amina my time to Rabbi Yehuda, and why according to Rabbi Yehuda did he get to the number 5? How did he get to the number 5? Explains the Gemara. V'samchu shnayim zikne shnayim, because in describing Parhelm Davishol Tzibor, the Torah says they will do smicha, the elders will be doing it. So that's 2 plus 2. The ain based in shakol, and so that gets me to the number 4. But Rav Yehuda says, but that's impossible because it can't be an even number. So masif olam od echad hare kanhe, and because I need an odd number, so therefore we're going to add another one, which gets to the number 5. So we see very clearly that according to Rav Yehuda, so the Sanhedrin is 70, and that's an even number. But that's because the Torah there says the number 70. All other courts made up of any other number has to be an odd number. So the Gemara says, so therefore, to say that Rabbi Yoshia agrees with Rabbi Yehuda is simply untrue, because Rabbi Yehuda himself always, except for a Sanhedrin Gadol, always demands an odd number. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yoshia adifa mid Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Yoshia actually exceeds Rabbi Yehuda's position. Rabbi Yehuda says that when it comes to the Sanhedrin, an even number is acceptable because the Torah says so. In all other occasions, he demands a court made up of an odd number. And then, as far as Rabbi Yoshia goes, he goes even one step further. So Rabbi Yoshi Adifa mit Rabbi Yehuda. I'm sorry, I read that. Sorry. Rabbi Yoshi Bishar Beidin Anami Leithle. And Rabbi Yoshi would be okay with an even court in other areas. Ve'ela Hailinto is my Avile. So the Gemara says, okay, simple question. What about the fact that the Torah says that you follow majority? If you, Rabbi Yoshi, at least in theory, are accepting of an even court, what do you do with the pasuk of lintos? Mukimla bedina nefashos. So the Gemara says, yeah, in capital cases. In capital cases, I need an odd number, but not necessarily monetary cases. Ava medina manos lo. So the Gemara says, ela hadana shtaim amrim zaka ve'echad amr chayev. Zaka, sorry, ve'echad amr chayev. Zaka shtaim amrim chayev ve'echad amr zakai chayev. So the Gemara says, what about the Mishnah? We're going to see the Mishnah later on. The Mishnah says that if two says innocent, and one says guilty, so he's innocent. If two say guilty, one says innocent, so you're guilty, meaning you follow the majority. Name of the local Rav Yoshia. So is that Mishnah not following like the opinion of Rav Yoshia? So the Gemara says, no, I feel it's him, Rav Yoshia. The Gemara says, no, that Mishnah's going like Rav Yoshia. But the So the fact over there that you require three and not two is because he learns it out through a kavachomer. When it comes to capital cases where the Torah says that you should follow the majority, so by monetary cases, which obviously is not as severe, it's not as extreme as a capital case, so there you should follow the majority as well. But at least in theory and principle, he would be okay with an even number court, even though practically speaking it's not going to be true, but at least in theory he's accepting of the idea. Okay, just a quick recap of today. Most of our day today we spent discussing this idea of a relaxation of the rules when it comes to lending, and the composite of a court, and the quality of the judges when it comes to lending, and drisha v'chakira, and the grilling of the witnesses in lending. And we do all this because we want to incentivize lending, and we therefore want to make the standards of lending a little more relaxed when it comes to the lender. And there is a discussion, debate amongst the Amoraim, where is the strict letter of the law in terms of how many judges do I need? Is it three judges or is it one judge? Machlokus between Rav and Rav Acha, and the Gemara points out, my Beinayu, would they subscribe to Shmuel's validity of a two-panel court? Not recommended, but Shmuel allows it in terms of validity. Would the other Amoraim agree to it? The Gemara says, Machlokas, and exactly the point. Rava would not agree to Shmuel. Rav Acha would agree to the validity of two. And then the rest of today's daf, we talked about the other cases of the Mishnah, with seemingly redundancy of the other cases of the Mishnah, and we finished up today with the discussion of, at least in theory, would Rav Yoshia allow an even number of judges? The Gemara's conclusion is yes, although practically it comes out to be the same, that he requires three, but at least in theory he's okay with a court made up of an even number.